Hey, everybody, Matt, Jess and Dave here.
Sorry, Jess, just butting in quickly to let the listeners know that I'm going to be in Sydney this week, coming up the 8th to the 12th of May, and you can get tickets now via mattshieldcomedy.com, then going straight to Brisbane on the 16th to the 19th. So tickets for my show Dryer Dryer in Sydney and Melbourne.
Sorry, Matt, I'll just cut you off there. I just need to tell everyone that our quiz show, our web series, is out right now. Do go on the quiz show. You can see it on Stupid Old Channel for free on YouTube. Type in "Do Go On The Quiz Show" and you can see three episodes right now covering topics like Google, Queen Victoria, the Olympics, and we got five more episodes coming up. So like and subscribe, whatever that means.
They are big topics too. And I said Sydney and Melbourne. I meant Sydney and Brisbane. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
I'm still here too.
Oh, hey, Jess.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Do Go On. My name is Dave Warnke, and as always, I'm here with Matt Stewart and Jess Perkins.
Hello!
Hey, how good is it to be alive? So good to be with you, Jess, Dave, and the listeners.
Did a bit of free vibrato there for you. And let me just say, I wish I was never born.
Did you catchphrase? Loving it. I'm absolutely loving
me
it.
Me too. I love it. What a delight to be here. Let's catch up.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
I recorded an episode of my bonus podcast, Phrasing the Bar, earlier that people can listen to on patreon.com.
Oh, that's cool.
What were you guys doing this morning?
I was doing the same. I was talking about the show Soul Man.
Wait, Whole Lot of Soul?
Whole Lot of Soul.
Fuck off. I was just talking about that as well.
And people can listen to that if they go to patreon.com/dogonpod and sign up on the appropriate level with the
absolutely
bonus episodes.
You get bonus episodes. We've covered, we've realized that at the time of recording, Brendan Fraser currently only has 12 movies left that we haven't seen.
Yeah,
basically.
But he's starting to pump them out again.
Yeah, that's right. He's got two that are in post-production.
Yeah.
So the podcast could go forever.
So that's our show about Brendan Fraser. But how does this show work, Dave?
Well, on this show, we take it in turns to report on a topic often suggested to us by one of the listeners. We go away, do a little bit of research, bring it back in the form of a report. The other two people who aren't reporting have no idea what it's going to be about, which is Matt and my role today. Mm-hmm. And Jess, it's your role to tell us about something. So, do you have a question to start?
I do. Galloneer's Cob.
Galloneer's Cob.
Appaloosa.
Appaloosa.
Arabian.
Arabian.
Horses.
And American paint are all types of what?
I would have said apples.
I would have said horses.
Yeah, and you would be correct.
Whoa.
Was it Arabian that got you there? I thought Arabian might be too well known.
What were the first two? They sounded like
Galloneer's Cob.
Galloneer's Cob.
I was singing corn at this point. I was singing apples then.
Yeah, that's when I went to Apple and I just didn't give it up.
And there's an American paint horse. American paint apple. So all types of horse. Because this is a story about a very special horse.
Oh, a special horse.
I'm going to do that all episode. Oh. This is it's a topic that's been suggested by quite a few people. David Baxter, Kieran Spillane, Ian Irving, Hannah Claire Oblivion, incredible name.
Wow.
James Claxon, Jeffro A, and Nick have all suggested this topic.
Okay, until Nick, they were all banging names.
Jeffro.
And then Nick went up to another level.
Yeah, right.
Short, sweet, efficient, bada bing, bada bang, Nick. That's Nick. Who I am. Love me or leave me. I'm Nick.
told you guys that my parents were considering calling my brother Nicholas, but then my dad was like, nah, I don't really like Nick. So then they named him Michael, and his whole life we've called him Mick.
Oh, my God.
And was your dad into that?
Yeah, I think he's come to accept it. He calls him mate, like a lot of Aussie dads do.
He calls him mate. I mean, you could have called Nick mate as well.
Yeah, it wouldn't have mattered.
Why not? He had a problem with Nick in his childhood or something.
He's like, I just don't like Nick.
I got bullied by a Nick.
Yeah, but then he's got a Mick.
He's got a Mick. Yeah, I love Mick, love Nick. I'm into both.
Me too. Love them both. They're all welcome here.
I like Rick.
As are anybody with the surname Oblivion.
Oblivion. Yeah.
Nick Oblivion. I can only assume that was Nick's last name as well.
Yeah, we can only hope.
That's where you wish you were, Jess.
Oblivion.
Which I think if you've never been born, that's where you are.
Yeah. I would love to be an Oblivion.
And I'd love to be with Nick Oblivion.
Then you could be Dave Oblivion. Yeah.
Oh.
Like if you're marrying someone with the last name Oblivion.
Come on.
You're changing that name, regardless of your like of your gender, whatever. You're taking Oblivion.
And
are we
talking like Irish style O apostrophe Oblivion?
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful name.
It's really good.
Of the Oblivions.
That's right. Of the Northern Oblivions.
A special horse.
This is a special horse named Sugar.
I like it.
Or Sugar.
Sugar Oblivion.
It's Sherger.
It's what James Bond smokes.
Sugar.
That is excellent stuff.
I actually thought it was also a little bit.
Excellent.
Yeah, sugar. Oh, oh, that's so good.
For new listeners, excellent and dog shit mean the same thing. On the show.
Honestly, I am not even being sarcastic. Wow. It's peaked this early, people. We are, what are we, 5 minutes in? Does not get better than sugar.
Sugar. So Sugar was a thoroughbred bay colt. I've learned a lot of new terms here. It's a lot of like horse racing terms and horse terms in this episode. I had to do a lot of Googling.
You're on a bit of a horse glossary.
Bay is just that as a colour. It's that sort of reddish brown colour, a horse colour.
Horse brown.
Horse brown. We've talked about that before. And he had four white socks and a white blaze, which is a stripe down the front of his face. He was born in March, or he was foaled, is what they say. Horses aren't born, they're foaled. In March of 1978 in Shishun Stud.
Bad at poker for that reason. Anyway, so.
They're foaled, got
so
it.
The cult, what, do you want, the cult is what, like a boy?
Yeah.
Young boy?
Yes.
I'm still wondering where this is going, so I'll let you continue.
Mm. Well, I've just started too, so it could go almost anywhere. But it's about a horse.
Because we've done a lot of horse topics.
Have we?
Yeah, we did Dave's one about the horse that could count.
Clever Hands. Mm-hmm. This is the special horse. Mine was the smart horse.
You've done Clever Hands. We've done Mr. Hands.
Yeah.
We've also done-
Well, we didn't do Mr. Hands.
The controversial-
Oh, the Fine Cotton Scandal.
Fine Cotton Scandal.
Yep. Which you can find on YouTube and in the podcast feed.
Yep. So yep. We've done three horses.
Plus, we spoke about Megatrots.
Oh, Megatrots.
In almost 400 episodes. 1% has mentioned a horse.
I would say we're a horse-based podcast.
We're half equine at this time.
Well, yes, he was born in 78 at Shishun Stud in-
That's how often James Bond smokes cigarettes. When would you like a cigarette? Shishun.
Oh, you've only arrived and you're smoking a cigarette. Shishun.
Come on, this is good stuff.
No, I don't think it tops Sugar.
Oh, well, nothing. I told you nothing would. Turn off now if you want it to, because it won't.
I really think quite a few would have turned off by now.
So, Shishun, where's Shishun?
Shishun Stud, it's in Ireland, in Kildare. Sugar's father was a British stallion named Great Nephew.
Oh, that's confusing.
There's a few fun horse names in here, so I mentioned them. Oh, not God. That they're important to the story, but
his
it's
father
fun.
Is great nephew.
Great
okay.
nephew, who won several races in France during his racing career. And Sugar's dam or mother, see, there's all these fucking different words for everything, was Charmaine, a seventh generation descendant of Mumtaz Mahal, a horse that is described by the National Sporting Library as one of the most important broodmares of the 20th century.
Whoa.
So this horse, Sugar. Is a Nepo pony. comes from good blood. And somebody will tweet us and be like, well, it's not actually a pony. Shut up.
Shut up. Let us say Neponi.
That was a bit funny. So Shishun, where Sugar was born, is the oldest continuously operative stud in Ireland or England. It was the first Irish farm purchased by the Aga Khan in 1923. Do you know anything about the Aga Khan?
No.
I was hoping Dave might know something.
Oh, Aga Khan, is that the name of the
the imam, the like a Muslim leader, sort of a spiritual leader. It's an interesting kind of thing. It's essentially like a family job. He's sort of like royalty, but without sort of having a specific nation.
Right.
Very interesting.
But based in Ireland?
No. Well, he was born in like Switzerland, and sort of inherited this role from his grandfather.
Oh, like a Nepo imam.
He's a Nepo imam. So he has held the position of imam and the title of Aga Khan since July of 1957, when at the age of 20, he succeeded his grandfather, Sir Sultan Muhammad Shah Aga Khan III.
That is a great name.
Incredible name. So along with his work as a spiritual leader, he's also a business magnate and philanthropist and has a keen interest in horse breeding and horse racing.
I really think those go hand in hand. Spiritualism and multi-billion dollar business.
Yes, I agree.
I mean, I'm making that number up, but I'm guessing it's big money.
Oh, yeah. He's worth billions. Yeah.
That is what spiritualism's all about. Just getting yourself back to the bare necessities of billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah, back to the bare billions.
I agree. I know very little about the Aga Khan, so if it's something you know a lot about, I'm sorry. I tried and it was quite confusing to understand. But seems like kind of nice guy.
Yeah, right.
So essentially the stud, the where these horses are being born and stuff, they belong to the Aga Khan. So in 1979, Shergar was sent to England for training with trainer Michael Stout, who had a good year in 78, training two horses. Again, I've just mentioned their names for fun. Fair Selinia and Shangamazo.
Wow.
Shangamazo.
There's a lot of sh names. Yeah. Is that all based on that stud?
Maybe.
Being a sh.
And both of those horses.
What was
horses
it the stud called again?
Oh,
the stud.
Shergar.
No,
Shishun.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Charmaine.
So confusing. So those two, Fair Selinia and Shangamuzo, had won multiple races between them. So Stout was impressed with Shergar. He was easy to break, he had a good temperament, and he responded well to training. And so on the 19th of September 1980, Shergar ran his first race. It was the Chris Plate, which is now called the Haynes, Hansen and Clark Condition Stakes.
Wow, that really catchy. Rolls yeah. off the tongue.
But so the Chris Plate.
Mm. Chris good. Or Crisp?
Chris, K-R-I-S.
Okay, who's Chris?
No idea. It was named that for like 1 or 2 years, I think, and then
Chris
it changed.
Chris lost the title.
Lester Piggott was his jockey. And the pair were the favourites on the day with odds of 11 to 8. I don't understand odds. I put that in there so that you could explain it to me.
Well, 11 to 8, that's
is that good odds?
That's 11 to 8 would be very – wait, I'm trying to think. If it's – because you don't talk like that anymore. That's very old school, I think. Because now you'd be like – it'd be into the decimals and stuff instead. On the tote or whatever, it'd say like it's paying $1.10 or something.
Yeah, okay.
So you put a dollar on, you win back $2.10 if it wins.
Gotcha.
But what did you just say?
11-8.
11-8. So I think that is a short price favourite, I would say.
Is that clear it up, Jess? It's a short price favourite.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming it's a favourite unless there's someone with short odds, and someone will be finding this very annoying. But 11.
I could have just said though.
I think it's like $1.37.
Right.
Like you put on a dollar.
Yep.
You'll win back $2.37.
Yeah, okay.
So you're not making a lot of money because it's likely to win.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And at his very first race, he won by 2.5 lengths. So it's a decent win. First ever race. A month later, he raced again, coming second, but catching the attention of the racing community. Following the race, Michael Seeley, the racing correspondent of The Times, thought Shergar's run was significant and that he was a magnificent stamp of a horse and one to watch over the following year. So through 1981, Shergar continued to race, winning races by 10 to 12 lengths, which is heaps.
That seems like a lot.
It's a lot. Commentating on one race, Peter Bromley informed listeners that there's only one horse in it. You need a telescope to see the rest.
Daylight second.
Yeah. He won that race by 10 lengths. It was the largest winning margin of any Epsom Derby. John Mathias, the jockey on the second place horse, Glint of Gold, another good name, said, "I thought I'd achieved my life's ambition. Only then did I discover there was another horse on the horizon." So he's so far ahead.
But he thought
the guy coming second thinks he's won.
I'm winning. Oh my god, is that sugar in the stands at the bar? He's already drunk half a pint.
He's ordered me one, which is nice, I guess, but also feels a bit like salt on the wound.
Yeah.
Imagine that. They go so far away, you forget about them.
Yeah, you're looking across, they're doing the medal ceremony.
Yeah.
You're seeing it all unfold in front of you.
You're still just going at as hard as you can.
It's like it's happening in slow motion. They've gotten married, had kids.
The horse and the jockey.
The horse and the jockey. Well, I was thinking a horse and a horse, but...
Hey.
Hey.
But hey.
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 Hey, who am I to judge?
Who am I?
Well, I think I'm in a pretty good position to judge that one.
Okay.
I'll say, and I'm going over your head here, Jess, bestiality is wrong.
Matt, that will not age well, okay? People will be listening back to this in 10 years, and they'll be like, wow.
10 years?
So ignorant.
What you're saying now is already aged poorly, I would say.
Me?
Yeah.
No, I couldn't. I could never age poorly. The only way is up for me. I guess. I don't know. Anyway, okay. So he's absolutely smashing it. In a racing career that spanned almost exactly 1 year, Sugar won 6 races and came 2nd in 1. So he's just smashing it out, racing a lot, a quick rise.
Yeah.
His final race was the St. Ledger Stakes at Doncaster on the 12th of September, 1981. 10 days before the race, a story was published in the racing newspaper Sporting Life that Sugar had not been practicing well and had become mulish. Stout stated the rumours were untrue. Sugar was running well in the race, although the soft ground was not to his liking. But on the final straight, when jockey Walter Swinburne tried to get him to accelerate to the front, the horse would not respond. He's like, eh. Sugar came in 4th, 11 and a half lengths behind, Cut Above, the winner. Some great horse names.
Yeah, that's a bit of nominative determinism.
Yeah. So comes in 4th. Surprised by the manner of the loss, Stout and the Aga Khan ran a series of tests on Sugar. They're sort of like, something's got to be wrong here. All tests showed the horse was in good health and he worked well in training after the race. The Aga Khan explained to a journalist, he was just an exceptional athlete. All through the spring and summer, he completely dominated European racing in a very dramatic manner. And after he'd run so uncharacteristically in the St. Ledger, we knew something was wrong but didn't know what it was, so it was an easy decision to retire him. So, you know, a meteoric rise, a quick career.
Yeah, they've gone, he just can't be fucked.
Yeah, he's over it.
And, you know, as far as a big drop-off, still finishing top 4 in a big race is...
Not bad at all, is it? So following Sugar's Epsom Derby win, a group of US horse owners had offered $40 million to syndicate the horse. This is in 1980.
They did not realize they used the term syndicate for just spread its seed. So they mean?
No, they. I guess
like
so.
Like breed it?
I think it's just a show on the regional affiliates.
That's right. Coming up after Seinfeld, Sugar.
So it's. I guess it kind of is that because the Aga Khan turned down the offer and instead decided to syndicate Sugar for $10 million at £250,000 for each of the 40 shares. It was a record price at the time. He kept 6 shares for himself and the others were sold individually to buyers from 9 countries. So he's sort of still. Holding a fair
bit. Just means it's like selling shares. So it's like, so you hear of sometimes like a big, maybe a Melbourne Cup winner will be owned by a syndicate.
Yeah.
And it might be, you know, hundreds of people who have all paid a couple of $1,000 and they get this top, they get a 1% share or a 0.5% share or something.
Syndication by he's retired, but we're going to breed this horse with all the other
horses.
Which
I think they're going to do, but
yes.
But you buy a share of that.
And then you get per. Stud fee or whatever?
Well, that's
I guess
right.
Jess is about to explain.
Sorry. Yeah, my next sentence.
Sorry.
The shareholders had the option each year of selecting a mare to be covered, which was just to mate with Sugar, or of selling that option on. So they could also sell if somebody had a mare that they wanted to mate with Sugar but they weren't a stakeholder could sell them that opportunity.
What a strange business
and
world.
What a weird... So
and this is all because their kids are going to be fast horse runners, probably.
So, yeah.
But they've got 40 times per year, 40 bangs per year.
Yeah, and the stud fees were £60,000 to £80,000 per cover, which meant that shareholders could expect to make a profit from the stud within 4 years.
That's a good investment.
Yeah.
But what a strange investment.
It's
strange
so investment. Strange.
You're investing in jizz. And
you're pimping out a horse.
Oh, yes. Well, you absolutely are. And then being like, well, all right, you can buy my route.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess feel the only like rooting danger- the horse is here.
Yeah, we didn't say it was, had to be with the horse.
I think that was strongly implied, yeah, sir.
I'm going to have to write that in your contract.
But the I guess the danger would be that, you know, the horse gets sick or something like that and it doesn't even make it through 4 years, and then that's the only way you'd lose the money, I suppose.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Or if early on the offspring don't seem to be doing well,
they work
or
out the horse is infertile.
Yeah. They didn't realise it's a gelding, which means that it's Nad's lopped off.
Yeah, that's right. So many nads.
We should have checked that.
Oh, did anybody check the nads?
We got to check the nads.
We didn't realise it was a giraffe.
Oh, that could go straight to Hollywood, though.
Are they quick?
Racing
giraffes?
Stripes.
Yeah. As fast
sequel?
As a racing horse?
Oh, great
Surely
question.
Not.
Great question.
Well, it depends. Is it a thoroughbred giraffe?
Okay, I'm going to look up top speed of a giraffe. You look up top speed top of a racehorse. Top speed of giraffe.
Okay.
Okay, I've got a maximum.
I've got a miles per hour. Have you got that?
I have got a kilometers per hour, so there's no way we'll ever be able to figure this out.
Okay. Oh, let me convert because I know it freaks you out.
I don't get miles.
I'm going to look up top speed of a zebra.
Okay.
Okay, let's see. Okay, so before we reveal the top speeds, who do we reckon? Zebra, giraffe, racehorse.
I reckon giraffes are bloody quick.
I'm going to say racehorse.
Yeah.
Just because they've got race in the name.
Yeah, I think racehorse.
Okay, you want to go the...
And we're going Ks per hour.
I've got the fastest recorded race time for a thoroughbred per
Fantastic.
Hour.
Fantastic. Okay, Matt, you go first. Top speed of a zebra.
According to sandiego.zoo.org.
Mm-hmm.
56 k's per hour.
Ooh,
that's pretty fast. Quick. That's pretty fast.
A giraffe, according to Google.com, 60 k's per hour.
60 Whoa, k's per hour.
There you
very
go.
Close. What about a racehorse?
Racehorse, according to horseandrider.com,
okay,
which
yes.
I trust with my life.
Yes, mm-hmm. as you should.
Fastest recorded time for a thoroughbred is 70 kilometres
yes,
per hour.
I was right. I knew it would
but
be
it's
a racehorse.
But it's in the ballpark,
but
and that's the fastest ever.
Yeah, totally.
They're all very, so
a giraffe's gone 60 k's an hour.
And zebra is?
Zebra's 56, but that's like just your average zebra.
Incredible.
So I think racing stripes, was that based on a true story?
Well, I hope so.
Hey, happy to be wrong, but I think we've
all-
And
if it wasn't, it's going to inspire our yes. true story.
We've all learned something here today.
So the horse is retired and the Aga Khan decides to keep him at a stud in Kildare at Ballymanny. I'm saying that wrong? I'm so sorry. This is from Wikipedia, a great horse racing website I found, wikipedia.org.
The W is for whipping horses.
That's correct.
which is outdated.
Yeah.
Or they still do that overseas? Australia, they pretty much
They don't whip
that.
Them anymore?
They made the whips really soft and they're only allowed to whip them a couple times.
Wow, okay.
That's weird. Just make none of them be able to whip. Then yeah. they're all equal.
Yeah. So this is from Wiki. He arrived in October of 1981 and was paraded down the main street of Newbridge. Milton Toby, the writer on thoroughbred racing and equine law, judges Chagar to have been a national hero in Ireland, one of the most recognisable sports personalities, horse or human, in Ireland.
Wow. What year is this again?
National hero, 1981.
Right.
A horse is a national hero.
I'm still curious, is this just an episode about this horse that was really good at running? Or is there some wild twist coming up where it turns out it's a giraffe or something like that?
Sorry if I spoiled it.
Ruin everything, and I hate you.
It ends up, you know, gapping a second career on Wall Street.
It's just a story about a really fast horse.
I believe it was pitched as special horse, which I'm wondering what that could mean.
Well, special, it's special speed.
Yeah, I just meant like a really fast horse.
It's faster than a giraffe.
You guys always want something like different and interesting and crazy to happen, but like sometimes. Fact is crazier than fiction.
Yeah.
know what I mean? Yeah. And this horse was crazy fast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Faster than anyone could imagine in fiction. No one could imagine a faster horse.
No one could
horse.
Imagine. So he's made a return back to Ireland. He's an absolute hero. The following year, 1982, was Chagar's only rutting season. That's Fuckfest 3000, baby.
Oh, it only had one rut fest.
Yeah. He made it with 44 mares. 36 of them became pregnant.
What a guy.
44.
Whoa.
36. Successful. So that's a pretty good hit rate.
That is a really good hit rate.
He's fertile. Has got balls. 17 colts and 19 fillies were born. Three of them won group races in later years. So he did have, you know, some pretty good genes he passed down.
How many won group races?
Three of them.
Three of them. So, you know.
Three out of 36. Pretty good.
It's almost 10%.
There's part of me is wondering, he really fell off a cliff here. Has it been swapped over for a giraffe? I know you're looking at me like, drop the giraffe thing, but I just think a giraffe plays into this somehow.
Okay.
And that would make sense why it's such a small percent. Like, because I think if a giraffe mated with, you know, 36 or 44 mares,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to get none. They're not all going to get pregnant. It's going to be lower than that because I don't think giraffes and horses generally have babies. And that's why it's only 36 out of 44.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm thinking they've switched it out for a giraffe before its final race.
The giraffe maths add up.
Which says it's slightly less fast.
Yeah, but still finishes fast. Fourth. It's not fourth. Yeah.
The giraffe probably would finish fourth.
Yeah. So, I think that maybe is what's happened here.
Zebra was fifth. It was a very strange race.
And look, we're going to need to edit all this out because you're spoiling the big surprise.
Sorry.
Sorry. I could have picked any animal and I said giraffe. Idiot.
At the start of February 1983, Chagall's second stud season was about to begin and he was in high demand and had a full book of 55 mares to cover. He was expected to earn £1 million for the season.
£1 million for £1 million?
Yeah. £54.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It was very efficient.
Really? One and done?
One and done. done. Next. Next.
Line them up.
So he's heading into his.
They're playing popcorn. And done.
You're welcome.
Can someone animate that?
You'll end up on a list, but it'll be funny.
The list of coolest short movies ever.
So he's heading into his second stud season. However, on the 8th of February 1983, at around 8:30 p.m., three masked men entered the house of Jim Fitzgerald, the head groom at Ballymoney. One of the men said, "We've come for Chagall. We want £2 million for him."
Whoa.
Wait,
they've come for.
We want the money now. We haven't got him yet.
They've done the ransom before the kidnapping.
They're just letting him know.
Hello, we're going to kidnap your son tomorrow and we want $10 million.
They're the Babe Ruth of horse kidnappers. They're already pointing to the stand. $3 million.
Yeah, for this one here.
We're about to take it.
Yeah. Back up the trailer.
The three men who entered his home were just a part of a larger group. Resources say it was between 6 and 9 men in total. Fitzgerald's family were locked into a room while he was taken at gunpoint out to Chagall's stable and told to put the horse in the back of a trailer. A horse trailer, not just like one they've rented from Bunnings. Just a horse standing there.
Yeah, from Bunnings. The courtesy trailer.
What a beautiful horse, service.
A horse standing on it.
A horse standing on top, of a lawnmower. We haven't dropped off what they actually bought from Bunnings. I mean, we were going this way anyway.
I just thought it was easier. Chagall was driven away in the trailer and Fitzgerald was shoved into a van. He was made to lie on the floor of the van and his face was covered. And he was driven around for 4 hours before being let out of the van near Kilcock, about 20 miles or 32 k's away from Ballymoney. He was told not to contact police or his family would be killed.
Ooh.
That is scary.
So he's dumped in the middle of nowhere. He walked.
Oh, a bit rough on Kilcock.
He's near Kilcock. Okay. He's not in Kilcock. He's not in the city centre. He's like, I'm in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Because I know that our listeners in Kilcock would be like, Jess, please, come on. We got some beautiful sights and sounds.
In Kilcock.
Yeah.
What do you think we're named after?
Yeah.
It's lovely.
It's a lovely spot.
Lovely. It's probably Kilcock, but... Well, it's funny.
Come on.
There's
a comedy pronunciation and then there's Kilcock.
Yeah. So Fitzgerald walked onto the next village and called his brother to pick him up. On arrival back at Ballymoney, he rang Ghislaine Dreon, the manager of Aga Khan's Irish Studs, to inform him of the theft and urged him not to call police because of the threats that had been made. Dreon attempted to reach the Aga Khan in Switzerland to inform him, then rang Stan Cosgrove, Chagall's vet, who was also a shareholder. Cosgrove contacted a retired army captain, Sean Berry, who was a manager of the Irish Thoroughbred Breeders Association. Berry contacted Alan Dukes, a friend of his who was serving as the Minister for Finance, who suggested that Berry speak to Michael Noonan, the Minister for Justice.
Imagine what the message is by the end of this.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Noonan and Dukes told him...
Sean Connery needs someone to smoke.
Chagall. Noonan and Dukes told him to call the Garda, the police. By,
so they did all that to get back to just call the cops,
it keeps
man.
Going. By 4 a.m., Dreon had managed to contact the Aga Khan, who told him to phone the Garda straight away. The force were then contacted, but it was 8 hours after Shigar had been stolen and any possible trail had already gone cold. It took 6 men and 8 hours to decide to call the police.
I love how the Aga Khan is like, oh, they're threatening. Oh, your family. Call the cops. Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
That's right. Call the cops. Why'd you call me? Call the cops.
Call the cops.
What am I, the cops? Am I the Garda?
Yeah. What are they going to do? Oh, kill your family. Yeah, call the cops.
Call the cops.
We're talking about a horse here.
Yeah.
Okay, my horse.
My horse. Let's call the cops.
Yeah. That horse is going to make £1 million from fucking.
And I'm a billionaire.
Okay.
So it's nearly nothing to me. But I like a little extra on the pile. Yeah,
but the only thing worth less than nothing to me is your family.
Is your dog shit children. I've seen their artwork on your desk. They suck. So, okay, you suspected something was happening. Did you think horse napping?
No, I was thinking it was going to be maybe. It was interesting that the quality of the run dropped off so quick.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe there would be a switch or something.
Yeah.
But
you're thinking fine cotton.
Yeah, I think I had fine cotton on the brain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got cotton on the brain, all right, mate? Not much happening upstairs. Cotton wool up there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's an idiot.
Call me fine Cotton Eye Joe over here.
Yep, that's exactly what I was saying.
Edit that bit out.
Nah. So the very first contact that the thieves made after the horse napping was the same night that they'd taken Shigar. Jeremy Maxwell, a horse trainer in Northern Ireland, received a phone call demanding £40,000, although this figure was later raised to £52,000. They'd also said when they got Fitzgerald, they said, we want 2 million. So it's very confusing.
No, we want 40,000. Actually, inflation is a lot. 52. No, sorry, no. I've miscalculated. I want 2 million pounds.
Just to be safe. Maxwell was told that negotiations would only be with 3 British horse racing journalists.
Mm.
They're like, we will only talk with these 3 journalists. Derek Thompson and John Oakesy of ITV and Peter Campling from The Sun.
That's weird. That's
we will
weird demand.
Only negotiate with these journalists.
Are these just horse racing fans who want to meet their idols?
Yeah. God. Oh, I really want to meet those guys from ITV.
You're going the long way around here.
Yeah. Just rock up at their work.
Yeah.
Like a normal person. Don't do that.
Who are the Australian equivalents? You know,
Bruce
our
McEnany.
Famous.
Bruce McEnany.
Oh, yes. Of course. Bruce loves.
I can't remember a sporting event that hasn't had Bruce McEnany.
Mm. What about Peter Donegan?
I have no idea who that is.
Fantastic horseman.
Peter Donegan. Great work out on the track, Peter.
Yeah. What about what some of the old 12th man? Kenny Callender. What about Kenny Callender?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Get Kenny in.
Yep.
There's our three.
Great. I mostly want Bruce. From an article from the BBC, it's a bloody great article. It says, Thompson says he got a call at 3 a.m, asking if he was willing to go to Belfast. He checked with his bosses at Thames TV and was on board the plane that afternoon along with his 2 colleagues and a camera crew. He said the scene that greeted him at Belfast Airport was incredible. It was like being a film star. There were cameras all around. The news of a lead in the search for the equine superstar had spread. About 100 cameramen and journalists were in or outside the Europa Hotel as Thompson and his co-negotiators arrived. That's where they were told to meet, which apparently was that hotel, the Europa Hotel, I think was bombed several times during the Troubles. So it was a significant kind of place, and it was known and potentially didn't feel very safe. So they arrived there. Thompson said he was trying to push his way through the press pack when a voice from reception said, Mr. Thompson, would you pick up the hotel phone? At the other end of the line was a voice Thompson described as cold, chilling. It gave the agreed code word, Arkle, the name of a famous Irish steeplechaser, and then warned Thompson, we're watching you from across the road.
Wow. Can I just ask the man of 1,000 noises, what would a cold, chilling voice saying Arkle, what does that sound like?
Does Irish as well.
And Irish, of course. Work. Cold, chilling Irish.
Particular spot in Ireland?
Northern.
Northern, okay.
Kilcock.
Flower. Shar. Our. And what was the word?
Arkle.
Arkle. And this is a chilling.
Chilling and cold.
Okay, are you answering the phone?
Yes. Yoo-hoo!
The cold word is Arkle.
Incredible.
That is chilling.
Wow, I feel chilled to the core.
Oh, he's still acting. Oh my God.
What about we're watching you?
We're watching you.
From where? Where are you watching
I'd
from?
Have to say, sorry, can you please speak up?
I'm in a loud pub.
We're across the road.
I can't quite hear you.
Watching you over here.
You're watching me from across the road?
Steve Urkel.
Steve Urkel. Amazing stuff.
I forgot to tell you the second code word is
Steve Urkel. Thompson looked out the window and saw a row of dingy bars with darkened windows. This was Belfast at the height of the Troubles. Any optimism he had about his role had gone, so he's feeling a bit spooked. The article goes on to describe a pretty wild and full-on night. So Thompson's told to lose the press. You know, they were going to meet him at the pub, but there's all this press there. We know that. Lose the press. And get to an isolated farm 30 miles from Belfast.
Get out of here.
That's giving them a bit of a thumb pointing to where you can shove it.
Take it elsewhere. Tell your story. Walk in. Hey, jog on, bucko.
Jog on to the farm?
Yeah. 30 miles from Belfast. Straight out of a movie, the three men made their escape through the pub's kitchen and into a waiting car at the service entrance. As they drove, Thompson recalls, "We were lost, totally lost. It was the middle of Troubles. We were miles outside Belfast, going up a single track road. Suddenly, five guys in balaclavas and machine guns appear in front of us. We slam on the brakes and I think, hang on, these guys are just going to spray the car. They've got us over not to negotiate the release of the Derby winner, but to kill us." One of the men with a gun approached the car and gestured to Thompson to roll down the window. He did, and the man asked, "Are you Derek Thompson?" To which Thompson replied, "Yes, I am." And the man in the balaclava said, "We're the police." And Thompson replied, "Well, thank God for that."
I'm going to need to see some evidence of that.
Yeah.
The balaclava will do, mate.
This is a official uniform balaclava. I don't know what more I could. You can't just get these.
Yeah.
We're the good guys, so just trust everything we say.
Follow us.
Here's my photo ID. Yes, I'm wearing a balaclava in that shot as well.
It matches. Okay.
So the police took the group to Jeremy Maxwell's farmhouse, and over the next 8 hours, Thompson took between 10 and 12 more phone calls, each beginning with a different password. So obviously at the end of one phone call from the thieves, they'd set another password or something like that.
And who was the police the ones telling him to come to the farmhouse?
Yeah.
So they wanted him. Okay, so they legit are the police, these balaclava people.
Yeah,
and now he's making
more
calls.
But then how do the thieves know to call it Jeremy's place? I don't know. I don't know.
Wow.
So he's having all these phone calls with them, and they're kind of trying to negotiate. And Thompson tried to keep the caller on the phone for 90 seconds, which was the length of time the police needed in order to trace the call. But the caller seemed to know that and always hung up around 80, 85 seconds, wow. Just missing out.
And every time they have to call, they end up calling about 17 people over 8 hours between every interaction.
That's right. Finally, at 1 a.m., Thompson managed to keep the conversation going for 95 seconds.
Amazing. Was he like, I need to think about this. Can I just count to 90, please?
One, two, three. Yeah. So he's like, fuck yes, I got
it. But he tricked him by saying he started counting after 10 seconds. Yeah. And the guy's like, perfect, I'll just hang up at 90.
Got him.
Ha.
Fucking idiot. So he turns around to the policeman at his shoulder and said, "Did you get it? Where are they?" Only to be told, "I'm sorry, Mr. Thompson, but the man who traces the calls went off shift at midnight."
Oh, you are. Who's the feckin' idiot now?
Wow.
Isn't that incredible?
Jesus.
He's like, "I did it." Yeah, we didn't trace it.
Yeah, sorry. Didn't anyone tell you?
Only Brian can do that. I don't know how to log in. I don't have a password for that system, so. So they're talking on the phone quite a bit, obviously. I said 10 to 12 calls, but they're not really getting anywhere. The kidnappers want a payment of, like, an initial payment of £40,000, but Thompson's asking for photographic proof. Like, he's asking for some sort of proof that the horse is, that they have the horse.
Like,
and
send us some sort of horse's head or something. Mm-hmm. Just so we know the horse is still alive.
Give us a little piece of the horse.
Yeah, come on. Give us something here.
Come on.
Show good faith.
We're not paying you £40,000 for a dead horse.
Yeah, come on.
We'll take the hoof at the very least.
At the bare minimum. It's so close saying the whole word. At the same time as the journalists were in the farmhouse, the thieves opened a second line of negotiation by contacting a Ballymoney stud director and speaking to Dreon. Dreon was not a fluent speaker of English and struggled to understand the Irish accent of the caller.
Oh, my gosh.
And the caller similarly had problems with Dreon's heavy French pronunciation. 90 minutes later, the caller tried again, with Dreon asking him to speak slowly. A demand of £2 million was made for the return of Chagar and for a contact number in France through which further negotiations could be made. I don't know why. So the syndicate which owned Chagar brought in the risk and strategic consulting firm Control Risks to handle the negotiations. So they're taking this so seriously. They're like, we need this fucking horse back. We've all put a lot of money into it. He's going to make us a lot of money.
Yeah.
We need our horse. We need to bring in
the professional negotiators who come in and they go, all right, who's negotiating? That man who can't speak English.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell. This is not going to work.
Yeah. Same as the negotiations with Thompson, the consulting firm asked for proof that Chagar was alive.
Oh, now he's lost two hooves.
As there'd been speculation from the media that the horse was dead. From Wikipedia again, the thieves said that a representative of the syndicate should go to the Crofton Hotel in Dublin and ask for any messages for Johnny Logan, which is the name of an Irish singer. Stan Cosgrove went to the hotel and asked for any messages. Armed members of the special detective unit were present and in undercover. No message was delivered, and Cosgrove returned home. He waited for a little while, no messages, so he went home. Shortly afterwards, the negotiators received a phone call from the thieves, angry at the presence of the police and threatening that if any members of the gang were captured or killed, the negotiators and police would be murdered in retribution. So they're like, don't think we didn't know there were cops there. You got to take this seriously or we're going to kill you all. It's a bit full on. On Saturday, the 12th of February, the thieves contacted negotiators and said that proof had been left at the Rosenery Hotel. When this was picked up, it contained several Polaroid pictures showing Chagar. Some of the pictures showed the horse's head next to a copy of the Irish News dated 11th of Feb, so the day before. So you say, send us the horse's head. They're sending a picture of the horse's head.
And like a guy in a balaclava with a thumbs up. It's all good.
It's fine.
We got this.
Got him an apple. He's happy.
He's really happy.
Cosgrove saw the photograph and confirmed that it definitely was him, although he added it wasn't proof that the horse was alive. At that point, you'd want to get much more definitive evidence. If you'd seen the complete horse, it would have been different, but this was just the head.
Right. You want the complete horse.
You want the whole horse.
You should be able to tell from the eyes if it looks alive or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, true.
Its but tongue was like, hanging out and there was a lot of blood on its neck.
There was crosses over its eyes.
Yes.
really.
And then coins on top. And the ferryman was there.
But it's hard to tell.
But if you get the full shot of the horse, how do you not know it's not just like four kids dressed up?
Oh, that's true.
You know I was going to say like if you got a picture of it standing up, but it could be asleep.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean it's dead.
Yes.
Oh, it's tough.
It was a very famous horse then as well. So there were already Halloween costumes and stuff. Very
lifelike. You could easily dress up like Chagar, yeah. The number one most must-have costume for the previous Halloween.
Chuck on four socks. You're Chagar, baby. Chagar. The idea of paying ransom was pretty much out of the question anyway. For one, the Aga Khan was only one of 35 members, so he couldn't negotiate or pay on behalf of the others. But he was also unsure whether Chagar would be returned, even if the money was paid, and concerned that if the kidnappers' demands were met, it would make every high-value horse in Ireland a target for future thefts. Because it's a precedent.
You imagine he's got that in his wallet, probably, a couple of million.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the precedent's what he's worried about.
Yeah. And then some people disagreed. Like, there were some people, members of the syndicate that were like, you know, if this was a child, we'd pay. And they're like, yep.
Yeah, but
it's not a child.
Show me a child that can make $1 million in one season.
Yeah.
Huh? Oh, wait.
I can't.
Can't. Especially doing what Chagar was supposed to do.
Maybe that's Shirley really Temple in her heyday.
But she's grown up, okay? Let her go.
She's not a child. Let it go, man.
Current day. I don't know if I could name a current day child star. Is Frankie Muniz still?
I think yours is slightly more current than mine, but only by about 3 years.
Macaulay Culkin.
Oh, yeah, okay.
What's Macaulay up to?
Hey, what about the whole Culkin crew? Kieran Culkin.
Kieran Culkin. What's Kieran Culkin doing? There's another Culkin as well.
Yeah, or the third Culkin.
The third Culkin.
Culky.
Culky Culkin.
Culky Culkin. Culky Culkin.
Get the Culkins in.
Oh, get the Culkins in.
Get the Culkins on the phone.
Maybe the Culkins between them can make $1 million in one season, but not one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's just from rooting. Once you get Hollywood fees on top of that.
Oh, my God.
You know, Kieran's on Succession now.
Yeah. I'm sure it's all right.
Fuck off.
Now, as I mentioned before, because it took 8 hours for them to call the police in the first place, police investigations were hindered from the very beginning.
Mm.
They're like, oh, okay, so this was ages ago. Cool.
This sounds like the police making excuses before they even get going.
It's really funny. That crime happened 8 hours ago. Honestly, the statute of limitations has basically run out at this point.
Good we would have. If you called us straight away, we definitely would have solved
it. That's really on you.
It's
not
a
us.
Loophole, 8 hours, you know?
Yeah. Don't come know on.
It's the 8 hour rule.
Yeah, and of course, you're not allowed to report a horse missing until 3 days, but even still.
There'd also been a local thoroughbred auction the same day as the theft, meaning there were a lot of horse trailers traveling around in the area, making it difficult to determine which one was the stolen horse and which way it went.
That's clever.
It's pretty clever. It's sort of, you know, like the cup and the ball and the...
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, oh, where's the horse?
Step right up.
Yeah, like that.
Shell game.
Don't let the...
What was that?
A shell game.
Shell game. Another horse. That was his brother.
I heard you go, shell game.
Shell game. Yeah.
Leading the investigation was Chief Superintendent James Murphy, a highly experienced detective. In his first press conference, Murphy described how he was slightly concerned about the theft and told reporters, "I have no leads." But from Wiki, Murphy had a strong Irish brogue, wore a trilby hat, and had a self-effacing sense of humour. At one press conference, he announced, "A clue. Now, that's something we haven't got."
I love this guy.
Several people claiming to have paranormal powers contacted the Garda with their thoughts. Murphy reported that
with their thoughts, as in like they contacted them telepathically?
No, I think they contacted them traditionally to share their thoughts.
Okay, damn. I was going to say, because if they contact you telepathically, you can't say you don't have any powers. Yeah, okay, I believe you.
Or I'm schizophrenic. Yeah. Murphy said, "Diviners, clairvoyants, and psychic persons, they're in three different categories. They must be running into the 50s now." So they've had heaps of people contact them and be like, "I psychically know where the horse is."
Right.
During one press conference, 6 photographers turned up wearing similar trilbies to the policeman. The Times called him a stage Irishman.
I just had to look up what trilby meant. That's classic.
Yeah, and that's Sean Connery wearing it.
As in like the camera people have like worn them because they're like, "This guy looks cool. I want to look cool like
him." Yeah, totally. Like he's become a character.
That's the best.
There was a documentary in 2004 called and a reviewer called Murphy the most richly comic copper since Inspector Clouseau. After 8 days with no progress, he was replaced as the public figure of the investigation but continued to lead it. That kind of read to me like he was becoming a bit of a media sensation himself.
Yeah.
And it was a bit distracting
on
the case.
It's time to shine.
Yeah, they're all just like, "This guy fucking rules."
Yeah.
Look at his fun hat.
What are we talking about again?
He says funny stuff. I like it. So with no definite news of Shigar's whereabouts and with the Garda limiting the information they released to the press, the media took to speculation to cover the story. Because they're like, "We don't have a lot of facts, so we just got to make some shit up."
Oh, that's classic journalism, as far as I'm concerned. The lamestream media just making it up, hey?
Bloody hell.
Hey, do they have a clue? Not likely. these goons, you know? Sorry to rag on your profession.
Those are my peers.
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
Karl Stefanovic and the like?
Yes.
Who's your hero in the journalist world?
Oh, probably... Sandra Sully,
yeah. Great. With the late news, that's sounds
Tracy
about
Grimshaw,
right.
Tracy Grimshaw, Current Affair.
Yes. Ah, yes, the Grimshaw.
Or the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
Nothing current about that affair.
Is that still a show?
You don't have to pipe in, Dave. If you got nothing good.
Jesus Christ. that was too honest.
That was cold.
I'm sorry.
That was cold.
No, that was great, Dave. That was very witty. How I saved it.
You're on about that affair. That's good banter.
I don't know if you even heard my late news. That'd be right. That was good stuff.
I don't really get it. Is it because I'm stupid?
No.
No, it was just having a go at Sandra Sully.
Yeah.
Being late with the news.
She used to host the late news. There have been a few group chats where someone's nickname's been changed to Sandra Sully because they've come in with a little bit of story or gossip or something that someone had said like half an hour earlier.
Yep.
A little bit of news, like in a footy chat, like, "Oh, it looks like someone, Kerno's been suspended or something. And then someone else comes and says, their nickname's about to be Sandra Sol.
That's good stuff. Nothing current about that affair. Does it work? Does it work?
Very good.
Thank you.
So these are some of the speculations that the media were speculating. That Shigar had been stolen by Colonel Gaddafi as part of a deal to supply arms to the IRA, that a Middle Eastern horse breeder had stolen him for stud, that the Mafia had undertaken the action to punish the Aga Khan over a previous sale of a horse which had gone badly, and according to the tabloid newspaper Sunday Sport, Shigar was spotted being ridden by the missing Lord Lucan.
No.
Previous report topic.
Whoa. Wow. So somehow Lord Lucan has stolen this horse and is riding him to safety?
Maybe. Apparently.
Whoa.
Incredible.
How cool is that? I'm reading, I'm like, Lord Lucan, that rings a bell. Who was the other guy in that report?
John Stonehouse.
That's right.
And that episode was called The Tale of Two...
Two missing parliamentarians, I believe it was, because they both went missing from the UK, both parliamentarians, within 1 month of each other.
And now we know that one rode off at record time.
Yes.
Such a good report. A great story. So,
just like, because you were just like, oh, that rings a bell vaguely. Beautiful story, well told.
No, I remember it being a wild ride.
Yes, 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 yes.
Almost as wild as Lucan on that horse.
Yeah. 8 weeks after Shigar was stolen, Stan Cosgrove was approached by senior detectives within the Garda who introduced him to Dennis Minogue, a horse trainer. Minogue claimed to have a contact within the IRA who had shown him a photograph of Shigar and said that he could help get Shigar released for a ransom of £80,000. The Garda asked Cosgrove to assist them in a sting operation to lure the thieves out. Cosgrove agreed, and on the 20th of July, 83, Detective Garda Martin Kenirons, probably, assisted the operation. He put the money in the boot of his car in a remote village, which Minogue was to collect once the horse had been released. The following day, Kenirons found the boot of his car forced open and the money missing. Minogue had also disappeared and the money was never recovered.
No. Oh, my God!
So they just stole the money out of the back of the
car.
They
just got... It sounded like it was a setup, but how poorly they... They just left the car unguarded.
Just put the money in the boot.
Their garter is their name.
I know.
We'll put the money in the boot and we'll use it tomorrow.
And that detective
You know where it is, but don't get it until tomorrow. We're trusting you. Don't get it until you've given us the horse.
We want the horse back, then you can have the money, which is in the boot, just there, in that just car there. Right there.
We're going to leave it.
We will not be watching it.
We won't be watching it, obviously, because we know that you won't get it until we've got the horse back. We're mates, right? Mates don't let each other down.
My mate let me down.
He had his fingers crossed behind his back, Minogue.
Yeah.
Danny Minogue?
Yeah, Danny Minogue.
Any relation?
Of course. Yes, it's their dad. That detective was dismissed from the Garda for breaching regulations, but always maintained his innocence that, you know...
He wasn't part of it.
So I've mentioned the IRA a couple of times. So police and intelligence sources considered the IRA as the most likely suspect behind the theft. And a lot of places will sort of say the horse was stolen by the IRA. In October 1981, the IRA Army Council, the leadership group of the organisation, approved the kidnapping of Ben Dunn, the head of the chain of Dunn Stores. It's like a chain retail place.
What's its equivalent here in Australia? Is it a Big W type?
Maybe.
Myers?
A rebel?
It's probably more of a Myers. Right. Myers David Jones kind
Ooh,
of.
Sort of pretty little
I think
fancy.
So. I think maybe not. I don't know.
And they, well, I mean, I don't know.
And it's Dunn's and they got the Ben Dunn.
They got the Ben Dunn.
Yeah. So oh my God. Irish multinational retail chain that primarily sells food, clothes and household goods.
So not rebels. I apologize. Okay.
No, it's not Rebel. That's sporting goods.
Sounds like it's the only thing with food as well. Whew.
Sounds like heaven.
But yeah. It's like David Jones used to have food.
Fancy chocolates.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never been in one. But they look fancy from the outside. They never let me in.
You're pre-banned for life.
You were born banned.
Don't you think about it.
Nothing in here for you. I think you might be a little more comfortable at a Big W or a Target Country.
See, I've never been in a Big W. I'd never lower myself to
that's
that.
That's my Yuck. Go-to. Well, it was. Don't know if they still exist.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you know, Dave?
I've walked past them and spat through the security.
You fancy boy.
I'm on my way to DJs.
Nothing fancier than spitting on a department store.
You probably wouldn't even know how to spit, would you, pleb?
They don't teach you spitting at public school, do they?
I'm a bad spitter.
Yeah, I don't know how to spit.
And you see, like, professional sports people, very good spitters. You know, cricketers who can spit through the guard on their helmet, get great power and accuracy.
Amazing.
You know how you don't like poop chat?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I hate spit chat.
I don't like spit chat that much.
Well, then why'd you fucking start it?
Dave did.
I did, because I love spit chat.
Dave loves all gross things. He's, he's the grossest boy.
Dave's the grot of the group.
He is a grot. Dave Grot Warnicky. We won't give you Cobra as a nickname, but I think the grot might stick.
Happy. Guilty as charged.
Little grotty boy.
Little grotty boy.
The more disgusting, the better.
TGB.
Let's change the nickname in the group chat. Okay. ASAP. Yeah. The little grotty boy.
Little grotty boy.
And I want to be the big fella.
All right. What am I? Well, by the end of the episode, we'll have something.
Great. So anyway, they've kidnapped Ben Dunn.
Who's the namesake of
Dunn?
Yeah,
yeah. He's like, he started it all.
Oh, my gosh.
He was released unharmed after a week, and both the Dunn family and the Garter deny that a ransom was paid.
Okay.
But
they paid it in vouchers for the kitchen section.
That's right. Only the kitchen section. Pots and pans
only.
Pots
and pans only. Nothing on sale. No lay-bys.
But according to intelligence, subsequently received by some sources, after the success of the operation, it was decided to undertake another ransom. Through kidnapping or theft, this time of Shigar. So I don't see how they could see it as a success if they hadn't got some money from it.
I reckon they did.
Yeah, surely.
It sounds like they don't want to admit that, yeah, we paid up, because it obviously encourages it a bit more. It's embarrassing for the Dunn family or whatever, but he's released unharmed after a week and they got nothing out of it. Come on.
And then sources.
They got a staff discount card
or
something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Inside sources are saying, it was such a success, they decided to do it again. How could it be a success if they hadn't got any money?
Yes, must have been.
And so they've decided, okay, well, we'll do it again. We'll kidnap Shigar.
Yeah, we got heaps for a person. We could get heaps more for
a
horse.
Totally. And here's the thing, right? Shigar has never been found.
What?
It's a mystery episode.
What? You're kidding me.
Nope.
Oh, my God. How long do horses live? Is it still alive?
Okay, I have another thing to Google.
Sorry,
horses live in their 20s, maybe.
I'll look up how long a giraffe lives as well, just for comparison.
Majority of racehorses have a racing career of only 2 to 3 years, yet their life expectancy is 25 to 30 years.
Okay, well, the giraffe still slightly behind again. 26 years in the wild, slightly longer in captivity.
Hmm, okay.
So I think we found the superior animal here.
Mm.
Horse.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, great.
Horse, how good are
horses? It's got a giraffe on all occasions.
I honestly just confused myself. Are we saying horses better? Yeah. Horses so are amazing. Good. They're so good.
I mean, giraffes are great. Don't get me wrong, but a horse.
Maybe it's just that we see horses more, but I look at a giraffe and I'm like, how the fuck do you exist?
Yeah.
Crazy. How's your neck
so long?
Heavy. You know when they flick their head around too? That makes me think, I'd pull a muscle. I would.
They're all neck.
So, never been found.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
It's a mystery. So, in 1999, a guy called Sean O'Callaghan, a former member of the IRA who had been working within the organization as an informant for the Garda since 1980, he published his autobiography called The Informer, The True Life Story of One Man's War on Terrorism. So, he's a spy. He's an informer. He's inside the IRA, but he's working for the Garda. And in his book, he says that 2 weeks after Shigar's kidnap, IRA member Jerry Fitzgerald told O'Callaghan that he'd been involved in the theft and that Shigar had been killed early on in the process after the horse panicked and no one present could cope with him. This is like a big, strong racing horse.
Yeah.
And they're like, fuck, we don't know what to do with this horse.
Oh, they didn't get any horse people involved. Ugh.
In the process, the horse damaged its left leg and the decision was made to kill it. This is what one guy's telling O'Callaghan. So this is possibly.
Poor Shigar.
From Wiki again, according to O'Callaghan, in August of 1983, in an effort to raise the money that they'd failed to do with the Shigar theft, Fitzgerald and his group attempted to kidnap the businessman Gallen Weston at his home in County Wicklow. The Garda had been forewarned and took over the house while Weston was in the UK. After a gun battle, Jerry Fitzgerald and three others were arrested. They received long prison sentences. O'Callaghan stated that essentially the same team that went to kidnap Shigar went to kidnap Gallen Weston. So it's kind of like corroborating a story of the police are aware of this attempted kidnapping. So it kind of lines up. Writer Milton Toby queried O'Callaghan's story, saying the IRA informant was a confessed informer whose life depending on his ability to weave a convincing web of lies. Without more evidence, O'Callaghan's story is just that, an interesting story.
Oh, okay.
So he's kind of like discrediting him. But remember Derek Thompson, the racing commentator turned negotiator? He thinks Sean O'Callaghan was legit. In the BBC article, it says, details have subsequently emerged, which have only strengthened his conviction. A password that he had never revealed was included in the book written by Sean O'Callaghan, who claimed the organisation had planned and committed the theft. So Thompson is like, never told anybody one of these passwords, and Sean O'Callaghan mentions that as a password. And he's like, well, that, how would he know that if he's not like somehow in, not involved, but if he wasn't in those
privy
conversations? Exactly,
yeah.
Right. In 2008, a special investigation by the Sunday Telegraph obtained information from another IRA member who said that O'Callaghan had not been told the full story because the gang was so embarrassed by what happened. And this is what they say happened. A vet that the IRA had arranged to look after Shigar didn't turn up because his wife threatened to leave him if he did. And again, I got it. Wives, am I right?
Oh my God, they ruin
everything. Once the IRA realised that the Aga Khan was not going to pay, the Army Council ordered the horse to be released. But believing they were under close surveillance, it wasn't safe to release the horse without incriminating themselves, so they killed the horse instead. That's another sort of version of events. But we still don't have the answers, and people still speculate what happened to Shigar. No body has ever been found, and people speculate where he could be. O'Callaghan said that as far as he knew, the remains had been buried on a farm of an IRA veteran from the 1940s. Derek Thompson believes the kidnappers took Shigar to the south coast of Ireland and, following the incident, dumped his body in the sea. He has no evidence to support that theory, but says it would at least explain the lack of a corpse.
Yes.
But there's also been, like, people have, you know, been digging stuff up and found, like, horse remains, and people go, could it be Shigar? But
it's like, I've got no evidence of this, but...
But that's what
it,
I reckon.
It kind of worked.
You can't deny
it would work. If they'd lit a big bonfire or they'd pushed him off a cliff or he'd been in a pond somewhere. I mean, it works out. It makes
just,
sense.
If you think about it, it makes sense.
Let's drain the oceans.
Just in case.
There's a bit of a legacy as well. In 99, in honour of Shigar, the Shigar Cup was inaugurated at Goodwood Racecourse in West Sussex. It was later moved to Ascot Racecourse and is a competition between four teams, Great Britain and Ireland, Europe, the rest of the world, and an all-women team. Okay. The winners of the competition are presented with a trophy showing Shigar, and this was donated by the Aga Khan. And finally... it's been turned into a few, like, there's lots of documentaries about it. There's a few
Racing Stripes.
We Bought a Zoo is also about it loosely.
Jack and Mary Wrote a Porno.
That's right. That's based on Shigar. People don't know that. So that's a great bit of movie trivia you had there, Matt.
Thank you.
But the theft was also dramatized as the film Shigar, directed by Dennis Lewiston and starring Ian Holm, Bilbo Frickin' Baggins, and Mickey Rourke.
And who's Mickey playing?
An Irish person, let me tell you that. The front end of the horse. Okay. I've seen little trailers. It looks horrendous.
Who's Bilbo Baggins?
Baggins.
Ian Holm.
H-O-L-M.
H-O-L-M.
You know Bilbo Baggins.
No, I do not recognise him at all.
Have you seen Lord of the Rings?
I think I have.
Probably not.
I don't recall it, though.
Well, I thought it was exciting.
No, that is.
But it was mostly that Mickey
Rourke
was in a movie about
it. But I've heard the name Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah, because it's from Lord of the Rings.
But I thought Bilbo Baggins was the guy who played Rudy.
What?
No, don't worry.
I don't know who Rudy is.
It doesn't matter. It's a guy from Encino Man.
Oh. Whoa. No, Sean Astin?
Sean Astin, no.
No, he's Samwise Gamgee. Well,
that's a name I've never heard of, but I do know Sean Austin.
Okay. He plays Sam.
Okay. That was a wild tale. And there was so much of that negotiation was so hard to follow.
Totally.
What was going on?
And that wasn't just in my writing.
And
of
they
it.
Never figured like it never figured out. It was so convoluted.
It absolutely was. And like there was some sort of there's a whole section about it on Wikipedia that was essentially like people were like, why the fuck have they done this?
Right.
There's no, like, clear objective. It seems like it was possibly for, like, media attention or to just cause a bit of nuisance or who knows. But they were, yeah, the fact that they've gone, we only want to talk to these three journalists.
Yes.
And at the same time, they're also calling somebody else not completely related and it's and asking for different amounts of money. And
yeah, like wildly different amounts.
Yeah. It's so...
like between 40 grand and multi-millions.
Yeah. Really strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
Have they kidnapped a horse?
Was it like two? They've broken up into two different factions? They know the horse is dead now and they're both just trying to milk out as much money as they can?
Well, yeah. That
one group's going, we'll just, let's ask for something achievable, 40 grand.
Yeah. I read something that somebody was saying that they've probably split into like three groups where like there was two groups kind of negotiating with the two different sanctions and then there's another group that's also looking after the horse or hiding the horse. Really strange. There was also like issues around because a horse is insured as well because it's worth so much money. I'm just finding it now because I didn't include it. But essentially in classic insurance, because insurance, like they'll do everything they can not to pay you, right?
Oh, my God. Are they going to claim we haven't found the body? It could still be alive, that kind of thing.
Well, the insurance with Lloyd's of London observed that while theft was clear-cut, the demand of a ransom meant that the action was considered extortion rather than theft, which meant the mortality and theft policies did not have to be paid out. Oh. So they're like, well, this is extortion, not theft. So right. We don't have to pay you anything. I think like I
love a loophole.
They definitely got some insurance money, but definitely not all that they maybe thought they were.
Well, you know, they were making money out of a horse rooting. Yeah. So, you know,
yep.
Maybe take a moment and think about what you're doing.
Yeah, I didn't feel
do
that
you feel
bad.
Comfortable with this? Making millions of dollars out of some horse rooting? Just think about it. It's a bit
just
weird.
Just think about it. That's all we're asking. Just have a think.
Yeah, okay. Now we've had a think about it, I can say that I was confused because Bilbo Baggins was also played by Martin Freeman. That's what I think tripped
gotcha.
Me up.
Gotcha, yes.
He was like young and old in the movies, I guess.
Right, and that's why
with their flashbacks
of,
or something.
That's why you that's, thought of Sean Astin.
In The Hobbit.
Who's the friend of him, right? No, doesn't yeah. matter. I'm thinking of a third
you're thinking
guy.
Thinking of-
the guy from Wilfred.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're thinking of Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood.
Okay, exactly. But I'm glad we got there eventually.
Because I imagine people yelling at their iPods. Anyway, mm-hmm. Does that bring us to the end of the report of
yes,
Fantastic
and
Wild Tale?
I've never heard of it.
Me either.
Yeah, I love one I've never heard of. I know, a genuine surprise when you say it's a mystery. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
I grew up loving horse racing
mm-hmm.
and I've slipped out of it a bit, but still, I just fucking love those horses.
They're such beautiful animals.
And it is. I get why it's people love it. They're just watching them run is pretty awesome.
Mm.
But yeah.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Anyhow, that brings us to everyone's favorite section of the show where we get to thank some of our fantastic Patreon supporters. Before we get to that, Dave, I just brought in a little package. Do you mind opening that up? It's from our friend James.
Get that.
Oh,
my goodness. Is this what I think it is?
I think, well, I don't know, but I think it could be.
Well, I'm thinking it is a do ghost on beer.
That's right.
And that's what the label is saying. Fantastic. James is the official Dugger One podcast brewer.
Yes. And this is the second batch.
Second batch. Have you seen on the side here? There's a question. Have you read this before?
No.
We'll see if you can get this. This is what James's beer says on the side. It says, as always, to get us onto a topic, let's start with a question. In the US, what cocktail do Americans celebrate on the 10th of July?
10th of July.
Because the 4th of July is probably some sort of red, white, and blue cocktail.
So purple.
They've got a distinctive flag over there that's red, white, and blue.
They're the only ones.
The answer is very close to my heart and my taste buds.
Pie. Cherry pie.
Apple pie. Like pina colada?
Pina colada pie.
The answer is pina coladas.
Pina colada.
This is a pina colada do goes on.
Oh, wow.
It says, just a little Krishmish pina colada sour made with pineapple, lime, and coconut to help say, how good is life?
And that might give you a little hint as how long it took me to deliver those to you.
It's the end of April.
I picked them up off James from Bodriggy, where he's one of the brewers there, which is a great pub in brewery in Melbourne. Do yourself a favour. But, yeah, I picked them up before Christmas. And I forget every time I see you two, I'm like, damn.
Weekly.
It. Yes.
And there's a little asterisk here saying, best drunk while in international waters.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Let's get on a barge.
On a barge.
Crack a few open.
Thank you so much, James.
Thank you. Love it.
What a legend.
But now we've got to thank some of our fantastic Patreon supporters. You can get involved if you get along to patreon.com/dougonpod. There's a bunch of different levels, different rewards. You know, you can get bonus episodes. You get access to the nicest corner of the internet, the Do Go On Patreon Facebook group. Mm-hmm. You also get to vote on topics, like Jess's topic today was voted on by the listeners, I believe.
Yep.
And
that is right.
You know, you get a Christmas card on certain levels. You know, it depends. There's lots of different stuff. Anyhow.
Something for everyone.
One of the things we like to do is called the Fact, Quote, or Question section. If you sign up on the Sydney Scheinberg level, you get involved in this. This actually has a little jingle that goes something like this.
Fact, quote, or question.
Ding. He always remembers the ding. She always remembers that she loves to sing. And the way it works is you get to give us a fact, quote, or question, or brag, or suggestion, or really whatever you like. You also get to give yourself a title. I read 4 out each week, and I don't read them until I read them. And here's the first one. It comes from Katie Clays, a.k.a. CEO, brackets, charismatic, egotistical overlord.
Cult leader.
Close
you got
bracket.
My vote.
And Katie's got a question writing, I've been binging a lot of time travel stuff of late and wondered if you were equipped with the DeLorean with every episode of Do Go on tape, would you use it to go back in time and change the future? If you had the DeLorean, would you go back?
So we have to listen to our own podcast while we travel back in time? Can we put something else on?
That's the monkey paw part of it.
Oh, right. Constantly.
You can go change the time, but you got to listen to yourself.
Okay. Jesus Christ.
You got to cringe.
Especially the early stuff. I'm like, shut up.
Oh, yeah. I'm like that with all the stuff.
Just my voice sounds different.
Does it?
Yeah, it's dropped as I've aged.
Mm. It's matured.
So would we go back in time and change the future?
Oh, that shit's super dangerous, though.
It is very dangerous.
Yeah. But what if I could go back in time and make us bajillionaires?
Okay.
Maybe we could go back and put some money on some I've already forgotten his name.
Chagar.
You know?
Yeah.
We bet it's going to finish fourth. You could have made a fortune betting that it would finish fourth specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that I think you'd get done for race fixing. I'm going to say, I mean, I definitely probably would, but I also probably shouldn't.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a good idea.
You know that episode of The Simpsons where he kept accidentally changing little things and then donut was raining from the sky and stuff?
Yeah, yeah, yep.
And he ended up having to live with a life where everything was the same apart from everyone had lizard tongues.
Yeah.
That's a scientific show.
I think maybe I'd go back in time and try not to change the future, but maybe just to experience
time. That's
try
more what I'd to, like to do.
Yeah, I'd like to be experiencing it, but I don't want to ruin everything.
Mm.
But at the same time,
I don't want to ruin everything.
No, but maybe you could, like, because I feel like you'd try to make it better, wouldn't you? You know, warn people about COVID, stop World War One, all that sort of thing.
Kill baby Hitler.
Yeah. But sure, that would change so many things that there would be other tragedies that would come from it, surely.
Do you know what I'd do is I'd go back in time with the money that I have now and I'd buy a house because I probably could.
Yeah.
Like a whole house.
Yeah, yeah. If you go far back enough.
Right? And then I would go back to now and I'd have had a house this whole time.
Nice. But what you'd have to do to make the currency, you know, travelable, you'll have to convert it into gold bullion or something.
Mm.
Shove it
up your ass.
You're going to have to gold mule yourself back to the past.
Shit out the gold, take it to the bank, gold and then mule buy the house.
Okay.
Are you willing to do that?
That seems like a bit of work, doesn't it?
Mm.
Nah, it's fine.
So that's a yes from Jess and a no from Matt. No.
Also, I feel very lucky. I've lived a good life. But there's definitely, you know, people who've died young that I could save their lives and stuff, which is tricky because you don't know what the flow on effects of that. That would mean other people don't live and, you know, it's I'm glad I don't have to make that decision.
Yeah, it's almost too much pressure. And here I was just thinking it's the only way I could get into property.
Well.
You're thinking I could save people's lives. I'm like, I could have a home.
Yeah. And I think that sums us up. You're always thinking about houses and roofs.
Yeah, well, I play The Sims.
Oh, yeah. So it's always- you're always thinking about building houses.
Yeah, I am.
You're a constructioner.
I am.
Katie Close, thanks so much for that. You are an egotistical overlord, no doubt about it, and you've really messed us up there. The next one comes from William Hofstadler. Something that Katie didn't answer her own question.
Oh, yeah.
Because that would have really taken the pressure. If we need to see someone else before we go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
We need a starting point.
We're sheep.
Yeah. William's title is Arg. And
that's nice.
Yeah. I think that is very nice. Sums up William pretty well.
Yeah.
William's also asking a question writing, what animal would you ride into battle?
Oh, well, for me, it's got to be a giraffe. I love those things. Yeah. They're quick.
They can see.
But not too quick.
They can see for miles.
And I'd sit on its head so I'm up high. And oh, yeah. Can't get me.
Oh, right.
Can't get me up here.
You'd sit on the head. Interesting.
I'd go elephant, I think. Same sort of thing. Size, you know.
A magnificent beast.
They'll fuck you up.
I'll go hippo.
Good one.
It's sort of like it's land and water.
Totally.
Yeah, we'd be bringing the scuba gear, though.
It potentially would drown me.
Absolutely. If you're tied to the back.
I don't think an elephant would, and they can swim.
Yeah.
But hippos can't. Remember, they go to the bottom and then they run along the bottom.
Yeah, yeah. So they're too heavy to swim.
Definitely drown.
What about a rhino? They've also got that horn.
Oh, I think you could win with a rhino.
Or a wombat. William says, personally, I would choose goose.
Oh, fantastic choice. You'll die quickly.
Yeah, very, very quickly.
But it'll be really cute in the meantime.
Are we talking about Goose the dog?
I assume so.
Oh,
okay.
He didn't say a goose, or he just said goose.
Yeah, he just said I would choose goose with a capital G. So I think that's the animal.
That's the dog goose.
Yeah, he's still on goose.
But honestly, you put anything on top of goose and he has a little meltdown. So
yeah, crumbles.
He'll flick you off real quick and then he'll run into battle and because he'll want to say hello to everybody and then they'll kill him very quickly.
Mm. Hello, knight and charming honor. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's done.
So we're going in with a giraffe, an elephant, and a rhino.
Yes.
Fantastic.
I think we're going to look great.
I think we'll look fantastic. Well, next to as goose. We get slaughtered.
Is
and
it us three versus goose or God?
I guess so. Good luck to your goose.
I was thinking William would be with us.
Yeah, great. And with us or against us?
And everyone else would see us and they go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Can't we talk about a peaceful solution? And we say, of course we can. That's what we wanted in the first place.
Yeah. But I did promise my elephant it could fuck shit up.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So I'm glad we're going to use our words, but my elephant is going to destroy your house.
Yeah. But it'll spare your family.
If you can get them out in time.
It's on its way. Thank you, William. The next one comes from Daniel Ryan, a.k.a. too tired to think of something clever. Can you make something up on the spot, Matt? No. Daniel Ryan, Doctor of Annual Iron. the answer is still no. And Daniel's got a question writing, hey, two of the stars from one of my favorite shows when I was younger, the Lex Luthor and Clark Kent actors from the TV show Smallville, have a rewatch podcast where they discuss the episode and the behind-the-scenes stuff from every episode. Sorry to shout out another pod. Ha ha. How dare you, Daniel.
Ha ha.
And my question is this. If you could co-host a rewatch podcast with the stars of a show, which show would you choose? If Matt wants, I'll allow him to rewatch Saints games and have players of the game on.
Oh, that's not bad.
That's not bad. Daniel's got an answer. Do you want to hear it?
Sure. Yes, please. Yes, please.
My choice would probably be Supernatural. I think the stories behind that show would be fun to talk about with the actors. Thanks, and keep up what you do. Daniel Ryan, you keep up what you do.
I think that I don't know what I would do. Yeah. I would host a rewatch podcast with Bob Franklin, and we would watch the episode of The Librarians that I was in when I had one line.
Oh, yeah, great.
And that would be the only episode
we discussed. What was your line? I don't think I've seen that.
Matt, I'll enjoy this. Do you think it's the same in Back to the Future Part 2? Thank you.
That's a great line.
Wow. And what was your role?
I was a film buff. Wow. I was a film student. Someone was giving a film presentation in the library and I'd gone along and I had to pop up my question and ask a very nerdy question.
Was Bob the director?
No, Bob Frankel was in the episode because he was one of the main cast.
Who was it? Was the Wayne Hope and...
And yeah. Robin Butler is their show.
Yeah, the Gristmill production Mill, company. Yes.
I think Wayne Hope was directing.
So funny. I still think one of the funniest things I've ever seen is an ad he was in for soup. And apparently they just sort of let him go. They let him do it.
I don't remember it.
And he's sort of like being serious, but it's his blender and he's no good and it ends up just being a canned soup thing. I'm like, that's just let funny people have fun and they'll make better ads. Then no offense to ad writers out there. I think you do fantastic work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, clearly they take up most of your brain space with their jingles.
But that's so funny.
It's obviously a ticket back into to the big time if you used to be on a TV show that has a cult following like The Office or something 10 years ago. Now you just watch the rewatch podcast, but imagine if I did a full season.
Yeah.
We just talked about my one line with different actors.
That's good.
Could I do the same for Ronnie Chang's show?
Absolutely, you should.
My line, which was, fuck off, you nut fuck.
That's even better.
That's great.
And your character was nut fuck?
No, Ronnie was dressed as a bag of nuts. And I was just a uni student walking past.
But you were about 48 years old at that time playing a uni student.
Have you heard of mature age students? And I was 117.
That's that would be. I'd listen to that episode. Listen to that series. Listen to that whole podcast. Sounds great.
I'm not a narcissist, so I don't want to watch myself.
Okay.
So I think I would do The Golden Girls with Betty White.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, that actually would be so awesome.
I think I'm probably going to take up Daniel on old Saints episodes.
Fuck, it'd be Parks and Rec. I'd do Parks and Rec. What the fuck am I talking about?
Poirot would be great because it's like different casts every week. Parks and Rec, you've already done Golden Girls.
I think Poirot would. Poirot. And also, actually, though, who am I kidding? I would absolutely watch Diagnosis Murder with Shane Barry.
And every week you could play Dick. Shane Barry and Dick with Shane Barry and Dick.
Wow. Exactly. See if their answers change.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And I call it Diagnosis Fun.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. I mostly just couldn't remember any of my lines from shows I've been in. And I don't think they were very good.
Yeah.
Yours are good.
Yeah, my line was great.
Mine was, I was also in a Wayne and Robin show.
Investigators?
Investigators.
That sounds right for a podcast.
And I was a, whatchamacallit?
Librarian.
No.
Cafe owner.
Fucking greengrocer.
Dog wrestler.
I was a dog wrestler.
You had a dog, though.
That was in Naomi's show. My only other credit. Check me out on Netflix.
Sounds like you got two podcasts you can start then.
Yeah, wow. That'd be fun.
Fantastic. thank you so much, Daniel, for that question. I'd love to just imagine Simpsons with the Simpsons cast would be pretty sick.
Imagine like all you had to do for a podcast was watch an episode of a TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Like we're idiots that we've set ourselves up.
With the homework.
So much homework.
But we learn, we live.
I don't learn.
And we laugh.
You learn, I laugh, that's for sure.
I definitely retain something.
I've got nothing, but God, I laugh.
The last one this week comes from Sophie Tutor. And that's how you pronounce it. Don't let me forget again, please. And Sophie Tudor's title is Group Mom, but I'm not very physical. So go see your dad if you need a hug. Okay.
That's fair.
And Sophie's given us a swap announcement writing.
Ooh.
Oh, this is another great perk of being a patron. Sophie organises these gift swaps with patrons from around the world.
So nice.
Done snacks and books and a few other things in the
T-shirts.
Past.
T-shirts.
Now, Sophie writes, I don't know about everyone else, but my 2023 has been a bit of a shit show so far. Sorry to hear that, Sophie. I was just about to check. We went on a plane with her, but that was 2022. Because I was worried for a split second that we ruined her year.
Oh, that's right. We went on a Concorde together.
So let's do something happy and fun. Later today, I will go to the nicest corner of the internet and post the sign up for Top Swap.
Oh, maybe T-shirts is coming out. That's what I've seen. Okay.
It's a T-shirt swap, but Top Swap is more fun to say. You are 100% correct.
Top Swap.
Top Swap.
Top Swap.
Sorry for rambling. Jeez, that's so efficient.
Not at all a ramble.
Sorry for rambling, and thank you so much for all the work you put into this network. You're the only three getting me through this year. Oh, Sophie, I really hope your year's picking up. Really appreciate all those swaps you do.
Yeah, you're such
and just
a,
your vibe in general,
totally,
so great.
Such a great. We're so lucky to have you in our little community. You're so lovely.
I fully concur with that. Feel very lucky to have you involved, Sophie. Yeah. Dave?
Oh, so.
No, we do have such a lovely group.
So lovely.
And there's, you know, some of them are our favourites.
Sophie's on the list.
She's in the top 1%.
The ones that organise us to go on a Concorde.
Yeah.
Absolutely up there.
So nice.
So lovely. Thank you so much, Sophie.
Top swap.
Top swap.
It's fun to say.
So fun.
Daniel, William and Katie as well. Fantastic facts, quotes and questions. So, yeah, if you get on the Sydney Schoenberg level, you can get involved in that as well. But, yeah, the top swap.
Top swap.
It'll be going all around the world. So much fun. I wonder if I can get involved. Is anyone from Gary? Can someone send me some Gary merch?
Oh, that'd be sick.
Whoa.
I've already got some great Gary merch.
People have already sent that to you.
I would say the bulk of my wardrobe is now Saints, Gary or Meredith Music Festival.
Yeah, a couple of friends of Roms for good
Oh,
measure.
That's true. It's pretty friends or heavy too. Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to the next part of the show where we like to thank a few of our other great supporters. Jess, you normally come on with a bit of a game based on
Let's the name topic. Their whore.
Oh, fantastic.
Nice. Of course, inspired by sugar.
May I kick it off?
Please.
From Balaclava, appropriately. here in Melbourne, Victoria, I'd love to thank Meg Haycroft, also very appropriate. Hey, Balaclava, gee, were you made for this episode, Meg?
Meg's horse is, of course, called...
Megnog.
Megnog. Meg.
That's
and
so
Meg
good.
Megnog. Megnog. I reckon Megnog is going to be a real champion horse. A real special horse, may you say. Thank you so much for all your support, Meg. Really appreciate it. Next up, I'd love to thank from Washington, D.C. in the United States, Stephen Major. Stephen Major up from Capitol Hill.
Yeah. What about King Dolly?
King Dolly. Like King Wally, the famous Queensland rugby player. League player. Apologies to rugby fans. thank you so much, Stephen Major, aka King
Dolly. Well, that's the horse.
Oh, King
Stephen Major's riding King Dolly.
Yes.
To victory.
To victory, yes. These are all in different races and all winning races.
All group one.
All group ones.
Does that mean really good?
That's like top. That's the top group.
Guys, I've logged on to a horse name generator.
Oh, my God. This could change our whole
logged
lives.
Logged on. Give us with the Duke on email. How much spam will we be getting from the horse generator?
We already get so much spam.
What do you need? What inputs do you need to spit something out?
Nothing.
Whoa, that works out really well. All right. And we can modify if we need to, but I doubt we will. This is a horse naming generator after all. I'd love to also thank, finally from me, from Henderson in Nevada in the United States, it's Cynthia Sanford.
Spooky Whisper.
Oh, my God. Okay, that is way better than what we were doing.
With apologies to Megnog and King Dolly.
No, hang on. They're pretty good. I think Spooky Whispers ballpark.
It's given me Spooky and Whisper separately. I've put them together.
Yes.
Beautiful. So there's still a human involved here.
100%. This could not happen without me.
Okay. Spooky Whisper is so great.
Really I'll give good. You some more lovely names here,
please.
Jess. I'd like to thank from Moura in Queensland, or Moura, it's Dean Drennan.
Toronto Tap Dance.
Did you bring them together as well?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. These are working better together than separate.
Toronto Tap Dance. That
imagine calling
like
a horse Toronto. Yawn.
Toronto Tap Dance.
I'm in.
All my money on Toronto Tap Dance.
That sounds like an 11 to 8 horse if I've ever heard one.
TTD.
Coming down the outside, it's Toronto Tap Dance.
That's fun to say. I would like to thank from Ridgecrest, California, it's Annabelle Martino.
Stormy Goliath.
Oh, God, Stormy Goliath is fantastic.
I'm going to outsource everything to this thing. I love it. And finally,
everything?
Everything. Naming my child?
Well, yes.
Doing the shopping?
Yeah.
What should I buy? Stormy Goliath. All right.
Okay. Well, sorry, honey. You asked for staples.
From East Grand Rapids in Michigan, it's the C3.
Whitewater Bob.
Whitewater Bob. That's awesome.
That is good fun.
The C3 as well, fantastic name. E Grand Rapids sounds like a place I'd like to visit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it my turn to thank some people?
E Grand. Yeah.
Okay. I would love to thank from Scottsdale in Tasmania, Katie Salisbury. Okay. Oh, Tornado Dreamer.
Oh, my.
Yes!
There's no way we would have come up with anywhere near as good as these names. Tornado Dreamer? That's really good. Holy shit.
I would also love to thank from Cannon Falls in, is that Minnesota?
I reckon it is, yeah. Or Maine.
No, it's Minnesota.
Minnesota. Love to thank Andrew. Oh, Splitstozer.
Wow. Andrew Splitstozer.
That's incredible. All right.
From Cannon Falls.
Jackpot Geronimo.
Jackpot Geronimo is taking them on the outside. Come down. Straight number one. Straight that's number good. One. How many splits are there? I don't know. I've never seen a horse race.
It could be a couple. Depends. Every track's different.
Geronimo. Yeah,
that's what's beautiful about them.
Coming straight down the corkscrew now. Flipping upside down. Oh, the jockey has fallen to his death. But the horse continues on and wins.
Group one, slippery dip.
What happens if a jockey falls off and the horse still wins?
It doesn't win, unfortunately.
That's not fair.
Yeah, the horse still won.
The horse is doing all the work. Yeah. That's not fair. Sorry, jockeys. Don't come
at me. But if the jockey hangs on, Matt.
Yeah.
And they die.
Yeah, that was an early episode of Who Knew It asked that question. It was a funny little loophole.
They gave him the well, you know, the horse won, right?
Yeah.
That rings a bell. Was I there or have I just listened?
You might have listened. It was a Kirsty and Dave.
Right. I'm a big fan of
Who Knew It. Oh, that's very nice. Bopper?
It's my faves. And not out of obligation.
Because you are obliged.
Oh, 100%. But I actually enjoy it. and finally, I would love to thank from Minneapolis, Cade and Matthew Kittens.
Wow, Kittens. Great.
All right, last one. Here we go.
Cade and Matthew Kittens.
Or Marengo Splash.
Oh, my God.
Marengo Splash.
That sounds like that's got to be the cocktail in the Triptych Club tonight.
Don't okay, sorry. Tell me.
Okay, no, you're right. No, fair. Cool,
she's got
fair.
The finger out.
And she normally doesn't pull it out.
No, that's serious.
Yeah.
Maybe sorry. You need to pull your finger out.
Sorry about that, Bob.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I'm so sorry about that, Bob. I stepped out of line there. I'm really sorry.
Unbelievable.
Please, Bob, please forgive me.
Well, I don't know that I can.
Bob, can you forgive me and please join me in thanking Cade, Matthew, Andrew, Katie, the C, Annabelle, Dean, Cynthia, Stephen, and Meg from Eggnog.
And Eggnog's very good.
Finally, I mean, imagine what we could have come up with if we went back in time and changed it to a world where there was no horse naming.
I'm going to use a horse name generator for other stuff too.
Yeah, great. I think we got to bring that in. That could be a game changer each week. All right. Now, Dave, you're very good at explaining how the Triptych Club works.
Well, the Triptych Club, it's our clubhouse, our hall of fame, if you will, our hangout zone to celebrate the people that have been supporting the show for three consecutive years. They've already had a shout out a couple of years back, but to thank them again, we induct them into this hall of fame called the Triptych Club. And inside, it's a bar, it's a clubhouse, it's a gig, it's a chill out area. There's a hockey table, there's billiards, there's bands that play. Jess is behind the bar. Every week she adds a new cocktail and a new hors d'oeuvre or a bit of food. So
must be stressful because you keep the old menus still exist, right? These are just adding to an
there's now hundreds of drinks.
But I think it helps that we kind of add slowly.
Mm.
So it's sort of, it really feels like every week I have to learn one new recipe.
Yes.
And
your mind is very good at retaining old information.
Yeah, and sort of, I think it's muscle memory.
Yeah.
A lot of the time too, people will be like, can I have this? And it's from like episode 50 and I'm like, yeah, no worries. Yeah. So that's nice. But yeah, it is a lot, but you know, that's just part of the perks.
I probably also, which is obviously a catchphrase, but the one of their helpful things as well is that most of the things you've put together over the last year are undrinkable.
Yeah, they are. There's a lot of dog shit on there.
Yeah, so it makes the choice a lot easier.
Yeah, and very, very hot soup.
Yeah, the soup is too hot. It is not cooling down.
Dangerously hot, some would say.
I lost my mind that episode. I laughed so hard. I
loved it.
It's too hot.
I remember it well.
I have a special cocktail this time.
Oh, great.
It's called the Celestial Jelly Bean. and what I've done is I've got jelly bean infused vodka. Remember when you would do that as a teenager? And it's essentially just that, but then with other stuff.
That sounds great. I never did that as a teenager, but I love
really?
The
vodka. You put Skittles in vodka and you just let it sort of sit there and then you got Skittle flavored vodka?
No, but.
Oh, with Red Rippers? Did the.
No.
Delicious. Oh, yes, I did that one.
Yeah.
It goes red.
Yeah.
I love that. That sounds awesome, though.
It was awesome.
I did go to Frostbites, though, and they had the slushies of all those, I used to love the musk-flavored slushies.
A musk slushie.
So I think they did that. They just had the,
yeah.
But I paid a premium. You were doing it at home for much better value.
Auntie Donna did it at one of their About Tonight specials with vodka, and then the show was over and we just had a lot of vodka left over, so we were just doing shots.
Okay.
And then I went to a pub where I went to Spleen because that's where everybody was because it was a Monday night, and I walked in thinking I looked quite sober, and Adam Knox told me later that was not the case.
Were you on the lineup?
Like, hi, everybody. And they're like, oh, fuck.
Were you on on the show?
No, oh, okay. Just catching up with friends.
That would have been fun to see you on stage off the chops. Dave? Oh, wait. So, yeah, we've got a cocktail
That's
there?
That's cocktail, yep.
And, Dave, do you have a band booked this time?
You're never going to believe it. I have booked this week. I've been trying to get this guy for years. One of my all-time favorite songs. He'll be performing it. Peter Sarstedt, and he'll be performing Where Do You Go To, My Lovely?
I want to know.
So, a great track. No, different song to that one.
Okay.
What? How is it a different song to that one?
I want to know.
That's
No, I'm afraid it's a different song.
Oh, okay.
This
what?
Song, it's Where Do You Go To, My Lovely? Do you know that song?
No.
It's amazing that I've booked him this week. This is the coincidence because there's a lyric in the song where he says, your name, it's heard in high places. You know the Aga Khan. He sent you a racehorse for Christmas and you keep it just for fun. For a laugh.
And is this a song you actually know?
This is a great song. It's featured heavily in the film The Darjeeling Limited, the Wes Anderson movie. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
It's a great track. Love it. Big fan.
Wow.
But when you said Aga Khan, that is why it rung a bell for me, because of the Peter Sarstedt song.
Wow.
And I booked him.
Fantastic.
And that's coincidence.
Absolute.
Yeah, a beautiful coincidence. God, well,
week after week, he has an amazing coincidence. Yeah.
Does that bring us up to the time where I start bringing some people in?
Yeah.
We've got 8 inductees this week.
Great.
Love to welcome in. A little theatre of the mind. I'm standing on the door, about to lift the velvet rope. We've got a clipboard. If I read out your name, you jog on in because the crowd, everyone who's already in there is cheering your
name.
They're
losing their freaking minds.
Dave's on this stage. He's emceeing. He's hyping you up. Jess is hyping up Dave.
Yep.
Are we ready?
Yes.
All right. I'm lifting the rope. Here we go.
Dave,
please welcome.
Hold my hand.
Oh.
From Manchester, New Hampshire in the United States, it's Jill Stewart.
It's a real thrill, Stewart.
Woo!
So put my hand out and shake Jill's hand.
From Address Unknown, can only assume from Deep Within the Fortress of the Moles, it's Tim Randall.
I'm a real fan of Tim Randall.
Yes!
From Brie, it's from California in the United States, it is Brandon Kilpatrick.
Some people like their oysters Kilpatrick. But I prefer my Brandon's Kilpatrick.
Yeah, come on in, Brandon.
From Orlando, Florida in the United States, it's Patrick Plamondon.
Plamondon? I am a Plamondon.
Okay, you're going to have to talk me through that one.
No, just keep going. Don't ruin the flow.
Plam.
Orlando, you're magic to me, Patrick.
I've got a Plam.
Yes.
It's to hang out with Patrick Plamondon.
Yeah.
From
it.
Cincinnati in God's country, Ohio, in the United States, it's Andrew Hetrick.
This night is about to get Hetrick.
Woo!
Sounds a bit like hectic.
Yeah.
And a bit like Hattrick.
Yeah, I'm on a Hetrick. It's a New Zealander on a Hetrick. Okay.
From Richmond in Virginia, in the United States, it's Luna.
I love you to the moon and back.
From
If you'll be my baby.
From Edinburgh in Great Britain, it's Jasmine Lindemann.
Jasmine, you're coming in. Oh.
You're the Linda man.
You da Linda man.
There it
That's
is.
That's pretty good. I was because written down looks like Jasmine. I was gonna say you're Jasmine, but that sounds weird.
It does sound weird.
So I've gone with you. Thank you so much, Matt. Appreciate you.
Finally, from Address Unknown, can only assume again from within the Fortress of the Moles. It's Mariko.
Mariko,
the freako.
Yeah,
in a good way.
Yeah,
high five to make sure that they're in on the joke.
They know that we mean that as praise.
Welcome in, Mariko, Jasmine, Luna, Andrew, Patrick, Brandon, Tim, and my cousin Jill. Make yourselves at home. Grab yourself one of those drinks that Jess said, and
the celestial jelly bean.
Have a listen to that.
Peter Sarstedt,
some very hot soup
from the 60s.
And let us know, Jess, anything we need to let them know.
If you want to go onto that horse name generator, it's on thestoryshack.com/tools/horse-name-generator. Check it out.
I just picked up the pen.
What?
I was going to try and write it down.
You can also suggest a topic. There's a link in the show notes. And you don't have to be a Patreon to suggest a topic. If there's a story that you think would make for a good episode, send it our way. We love your suggestions. And you can find us at Do Go On Pod across all social media, and dogoonpod.com is our website.
If you want to hear about future tours and live shows and that sort of stuff, we're behind the scenes talking about a few exciting things. The Patreons will be the first to hear about it. But then if you follow us on social media, that's another place to find out. So certainly you'll be the first to hear about it and first to be able to get tickets if you go to patreon.com/dogoonpod and sign up on any level. But also follow us on dogoonpod.
We're close to 10K on Instagram in particular.
Whoa.
We'd really like to.
Right now.
That's what. That's almost half of what you have, Jess. Could you send a couple our way, mate?
Come on.
I try, but they're like, no thanks.
No nerd tent.
We're just here for Jess's hot girl era.
Yes.
And boy, oh boy, are we in it.
We're in the thick of things.
I'm so freaking hot right now.
Oh, my God. You're hotter than this soup we're standing next to.
Dave, boot this home.
Hey, we'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, also thank you so much for listening. And until then, goodbye.
Later.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.